Certainly funny. Certainly essential too. Very good afternoon to Lachlan Harvey and Sam Martin. How are you, boys?
Very well, thank you, Alan. Good afternoon.
Pet road rage incident.
Merging, I think, is probably the, you know, like a zip where you've got one and then the other and then one more. If you're zipping up your zipper and you get two in instead of one, it's going to mess everything up for everybody, isn't it? So I think that'd
be my pet peeve. Zipping up your zipper. Yeah. What about you, Sam?
Oh, just indicate if you want to swap lanes, just let someone in.
Yeah, exactly. No, but we go out of our way to close the gap, don't we? Hey, listen, an interesting piece. The boys are here to take your calls too. If you've got any comments or questions about money matters, 8223 0000. There was an interesting point in the Australian this week, gents. Pointing the finger at the big four banks again. What a surprise! Westpac, NAB, CBA, ANZ, and AMP and IOOF. Were also in the spotlight for their superannuation accounts, and they found some of their biggest super funds delivered an average annual return of between 2.1% and 3.1% over the last 10 years. Now, that's lower than if I had have put my 9.5% of super in a rusty old bank account.
Yeah, it may well be. It may well be. And look, I think it's really important to clarify two things. First of all, that the last 10 years are a really odd period of time, because if we go back 10 years, we are pretty much smack bang in that really scary period in 2008 where things were totally unknown. We knew that things were bad. We just didn't know how bad they were. We didn't know how long we were going to be in that, you know, that huge financial crisis that we were in at the time. And it was probably another sort of 6 months or so before we started to get any sort of clarity and the market started to turn around. So the 10-year figures that we look at right now will be completely different to the 10-year figures that we look at next year, which will sort of start from the end of that global financial crisis as well.
But does that justify such low returns? Does that mean that they were actually investing wisely, they're investing our funds?
Not at all, but it's really important to clarify that when they're talking about those super funds, what they're talking about is like a choose-your-own-adventure type super fund, where you've got ultimate choice about what you invest in, and you can invest in shares directly, you can invest in shares through managed funds, you can invest in international shares, or you can invest in cash and term deposits and fixed interest securities. So the investors really get the ultimate choice in those funds where they're invested. Now, talking about how the fund has performed really makes no sense at all. But I think the point is there that quite possibly that those banks have let their customers down in terms of the not just the way that those funds have performed, but the way that they have looked after their money and looked after their customers' interests as well.
I think you'll also find their own employees' funds were actually performing a little bit better.
Well,
which points another finger, doesn't it?
I'm probably a little bit harsher than Lockie on this topic. Mm. I think that article is absolute nonsense, really, the way it was portrayed. Like Lockie was explaining, so if you've got a wrap account, there might be 500 different fund managers on that wrap account. What they were using to compare was the average of all of those 500 different fund managers. Now, if you came to me, Alan, as a potential client, I'm not going to put you in 500 fund managers as an average and then compare it against, say, an industry fund that's got 7 fund managers. It's just not a comparison that's worth even looking at.
Okay. Yeah. So it comes back to a very basic point, doesn't it? We need to get financial advice on any investment we make. And that comes to another point, though. How many of us... I mean, superannuation contribution is compulsory.
Sure, right? Yep.
How many of us actually take an active interest in where that money ends up?
Well, it's compulsory for people that have an employer. Mm. And that's not everyone these days, because there's a lot of people that are employed either under a contract, they might be self-employed, they might even be doing a job where they're being potentially paid cash. And the sort of circumstances, I mean, for instance, if you're providing a service to someone in their home, that could be a cash service. And there's a lot of people that are not working. Maybe they're a supported partner, people with disabilities, people on work cover. There's a lot of people that aren't getting a compulsory super contribution.
But what about the ones that are? Yes. Do many of them take an active interest in
not,
where that
not
money
when
is
they're
at?
Young, not when
no,
you're 20 or
no,
30.
Not enough.
And that's where probably the default funds are okay. And they're putting you into an asset allocation that's probably slightly more aggressive than what they'd realise. But when you're 20 or 30, it's probably a good thing to be doing anyway. Mm.
So when we're comparing super fund performance, and it's really easy to compare super fund performance and fees because it's just a number, right? And it's really easy to compare one number with another. But what we're not comparing is what level of risk was taken on to get that particular return. So if things didn't work out really well, like they have in the last, say, 5 years, the markets have been kind to us. Super fund returns are above average. But if things hadn't worked out that way and we had had another big setback, like in 2008, how would your super fund have performed in that environment? And that's really important to ask, because we've now had 10 generally pretty strong years, and people are starting to think, well, when is that next big setback coming? Is it in the next 12 months? Is it in the next couple of years? And it's really worth setting your superannuation up so that you are protected against some downfall.
Is it a case of, or is it just a marketing ploy, that the industry-based superannuation funds are performing better than these ones run by the big four banks, for example?
The current market conditions suit their investment styles.
Why is it? Why are they doing better than,
Different ways to invest, like different styles. There's like a momentum style, a value style, a growth style. So there's different styles. There's active and passive. And if you look at all those different styles, they all perform better at different stages of the economic cycle. So that's why we never hang our hat on our performance figures. Say we blend together 17 funds within a portfolio, we're never out there comparing it against the different fund managers, because there's always going to be a better one. Ours might be the best for, you know, 6 months out of a 10-year period, and then the next 6 months something else will be better. So you've just got to look at it through the whole journey instead of just at a particular point of time.
Can you just explain the blend process a little bit more? It means you actually spread the money over...
Let's say there was a choice of 120 different fund managers.
Yep.
The starting point would be to determine the client's risk profile, how comfortable they are with growth assets and defensive assets. And if they, say, had 60% in growth assets, which is Australian shares, international shares, Australian property, international property, those types of investments, then we would try and choose one particular fund manager of each style. So if they had 15% in Australian shares, we may have... four different Australian share managers, one with each style, one investing in small cap market stocks like ARB or Breville, companies investing or fund managers investing in everything but the top 20, and then a couple of fund managers invest just purely in the bigger funds. And the idea is to diversify across all of the markets, and within the markets you're diversifying as well and just spreading the risk.
Right. So if I don't take an active role with one of these big four banks or AMP or IOOF, as we've been talking about here, I'm just leaving it up to them. It's up to their discretion.
You can. Yeah, you can invest your superannuation in a fund that might call itself balanced. And that's a tricky thing in itself, because that's not a regulated term. It means different things to different funds. But to use an analogy, that's like baking a cake with a packet cake mix. You know, you don't necessarily see all of the ingredients. You don't get a choice of what ingredients go into it. But generally, it'll work out fine. And if you've had a think about the level of risk that you want to take on board, and if that particular fund suits your level of risk, then that's great. What we really encourage people to do is have a good hard think about your time frame on your investment, whether it be superannuation or not, and what level of risk you're comfortable with, and that should determine what investment option you end up with, not based upon past returns, because it really at the moment, the more risk you've taken in the last 5 years or so, the better you've done, the better your performance figures will be. Okay, so it's really tempting to sort of keep dialing it up to the super fund that gives you the best performance based on the last 5 years, but it's not necessarily going to be a suitable level of risk for you.
We've got Lachlan Harvey and Sam Martin with us from Goldsboro Financial Services talking about money matters, and it certainly does. So give us a call if you've got any questions for the gents. 8223 0000 is the number to call. I've been talking about superannuation. We have to make the compulsory contribution is 9.5%. If I've got extra cash, how do I make the decision about where to put that money?
Yeah, well, probably a good place to start is in the fund. If you're putting it in that superannuation fund, in the fund that you've already got is probably a really good start. People that have had their employers choose their fund in the past, and that is often the case, may now find that they have choice of fund that they didn't have before. So this has been in place for a few years now, choice of fund. Now, it applies to most employees, but not all employees. So to take the government employees, South Australian government, the last of the state governments not to allow their employees to choose their super fund. But even if people did have the choice, they'd probably most likely stick with the fund that they're already in. But it's good to know that you've got choice. If you've got multiple funds, it's a good thing to compare the funds that you have look at the not just the performance and the cost, but also the insurance that you have within super. And we always make a big point of that, because one of the worst things that people can do is jump into consolidating, you know, three or four super funds all together in the one place, and then realize, I had insurance in those funds and now it's gone.
Mm.
Because, you know, things change, your health changes, and it might have been easy to get insurance in the past. It might be difficult to get it now, particularly if your health has changed, you've gotten older. For some of us, we're not quite tall enough for our weight, and that tends to be an obstacle.
That's
when
a nice way of putting it.
When applying for insurance.
Yeah.
So if I've got
three or four schemes, which is not unusual, because, you know, every time I've changed jobs,
that's
that's the way it's been in the past. I might have four insurance schemes that I can claim on individually.
Yeah,
and I can bundle all into one. I come down to one insurance policy.
Yeah, and what you might realise is that if you've got four different insurers, you might be paying for insurance you don't need, or it might even be that the four combined give you about the level of insurance that you should have. And maybe by combining them and upping the level of insurance on the perhaps the most cost-effective one, or the one that gives you the best possible deal in terms of really broad-ranging cover.
Mm-hmm.
And it does vary. Super funds vary a lot in terms of what they will cover. So, for instance, what their definition of disability might be. And we want the broadest possible definition. That they tend to sort of narrow the definition to make it less likely to pay out upon claim, but we want the broadest possible definition.
Sam, that touches on the point, doesn't it? We can be overinsured. It's quite easy to be overinsured, and half of us don't even know that's happening.
You can be overinsured. I see clients that are approaching retirement. They probably don't need insurance at all, and they've still got default policies inside their super that they're not aware of, so I'd say they're overinsured. It's pretty rare that you'd see a younger person overinsured, because they'd be actively putting that insurance in place to be in that position.
Mm.
So if you were 30 and had a $4 million policy, you'd be overinsured. But it just depends on the individual.
Mm.
Yeah.
Can you actually opt out of that the insurance schemes that are part of your super?
That's what they're talking about now. The default cover, you can opt out, but they're thinking about changing it to an opt-in style. Insurance within super, so that anyone under 25 or 26 years of age actually has to opt in instead of opting out. But I think what people will find is that people just don't opt in, and then they don't have any cover, that can cause some unintended consequences as well. Or imagine someone that's 25 and they had some default cover there, and then it was just taken away because they changed the legislation, and the next month they went to claim. And, you know, if a month earlier they would have had the cover, and now they don't.
What's the attraction of changing it to be an opt-in?
Just because there's the unintended consequence of people having three or four different super funds, and they might have three or four different insurance policies, and it's just eating away their returns.
They talk about the drain on your super fund over a long period of time, but they don't really talk about the problem that a lot of people face, and that is just underinsurance. And a lot of young people don't have any cover at all. So, you know, if something bad happens, and even though it might only be a small percentage of probability of actually happening, when it does happen, if you can never work again, your life changes dramatically from a financial point of view. I think disability cover is a really important thing. And I think for young people that are starting out in the workforce, income protection is a really good place to start in terms of protecting what you've already got.
Mm.
You can't insure income that you don't yet have, but if you've got an income, then protect it.
What's your view on the tossing up between income protection and life and disability
insurance?
It's
a balancing act, definitely.
You'd have both?
You need all of the different types of insurance. They all work together. You don't need to have, you know, a hell of a lot of income protection and a hell of a lot of life and a hell of a lot of total permanent disability and a lot of trauma cover. You arrange them all so they complement each other.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So for a young person that's on their own, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have a big death benefit there, because they're not really sort of trying to support anyone if they were no longer around. But for someone with a family, a young family in particular, then that's a really important thing, just to provide a death benefit. Someone that's young and single and starting out in the workforce, income protection's probably where it's at, because it's yourself that you're looking after with the income protection, and it covers you for things that might put you out of the workforce for a period of time. So Sam's really into his mountain biking, so if he comes off his mountain bike and has an accident and can't go to work for 6 months, if he's a tradie, that's going to cause him, you know, some serious problems if he can't, you know, manually lift things and that sort of thing. He needs income protection to cover him, because what else are you going to do? You're going to go move back in with parents and become fully dependent upon them, that's not ideal. Mm. And in a lot of cases, it's not possible. You've really got to come up with a plan B. You know, plan A is everything's going great and you're earning an income and life's good. Plan B is, well, what if that doesn't work out that way?
A really good point to leave us on. Thanks so much, guys. The boys from Lachlan Harvey and Sam Martin from Goldsborough Financial Services. You'll find them at 120 Greenhill Road in Unley, and the phone number is 8378 4000, 8378 4000.